us out here to kick off the Wendy's Big Show on day four at the Toy Drive is our Milwaukee Baseball Insider from MLB.com and Brewers.com, Adam McAlvey. Adam, always a pleasure, my friend, especially when we get to see you face-to-face.
And yeah, Gary is awesome.
Gary is literally posing for a picture for you right now.
Damn right, man.
As we speak, while the show is going on.
Man. Yeah.
He's got his arm around you.
Yeah, it's my guy.
He's got his smile on, his picture smile on.
This is the first time I've ever seen the show begin.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Like, I don't know what I expected, like some sort of like ceremony or something, but like Michael's left. And you've gotten us, and then all of a sudden here, I don't know. I thought there'd be it's a great show.
Oh, you're talking about a shift change.
Yeah. Like, I thought you'd, get in together and,
yeah, that's
team
what I was
going to
say. You thought there'd be, some hype up before the show. Like, we'd all put hands in together and be like, show on three. No,
it was just like
that.
Here we go. We're
boom,
right here.
Let's go. Let's do
Adam,
this.
When the mics are off, we don't even like each other. to really let you in behind the curtain, we don't talk. We really don't even like each other or talk. That's how the Wendy's Big Show operates. How you doing, man? Thanks
great.
For coming out.
Yeah, great. Maybe David will tell you what they're up to.
Maybe.
When he comes in.
Maybe you could tell us what they're up to. Is there? Let's get right into
it. I like this jacket, though, dude.
Thank you.
You want to talk about the jacket or the Brewers?
That's nice, though. Don't you like that?
That's nice. Adam pulls it off. I don't know that it would necessarily.
That's nice. That's good stuff.
That's a nice fabric.
It's great radio right now.
Yeah. Should we tell them what kind of jacket is that?
It's a World Series edition jacket, MLB World Series jacket.
Did they give you guys those? Can I order one of those or no?
I don't know. Do you want to? I mean, make me an offer again.
What was that? That's 2018, dude.
Yeah.
We
got a jacket. I mean, we do a lot of stuff on camera so that, during the postseason. So you got to have a little.
Oh, so they give you guys
gear? Something to wear. Yeah.
Oh.
You got to represent the brand, right?
That's nice.
Represent the brand a little bit.
I mean, we get 105.7 FM fan gear every once in a while, whenever big time prints some up. Yeah. So that
did you hear? I lost myself. Am I still on?
You're still on. We got you. You're all set.
People are texting me right now saying they can't hear me.
You didn't even look at your phone. You're just lying now.
Yeah, that's what I got.
Can we get into the Brewers? Adam, from what you're hearing, how much truth is there to rumors out there? John Morosi, the first to report that the Brewers are in on Madison Bumgarner. And Sparky told me today that he saw a rumor that the Brewers were in on
Syndergaard.
Syndergaard.
Well, yeah, it's that time of year. If you think a guy is a good player and he's available, and, it makes sense for a general manager or assistant general manager to – gauge what the market is, because that can help you with other deals down the line. You want to just get a handle on what is the market going to look like for free agents, for trades, and even if it's not Noah Syndergaard, that may tell you what another pitcher who could be traded down the line, what their value is. So I think it's all about just right now getting a feel for the market. I think the big step before things really start to move comes tomorrow, that non-tender deadline, where a whole bunch of other players are going to become free agents. It's these players that are like in the middle of their career, 3 to 6 years of service. So they're going to get paid a little bit more, and teams are not going to be willing to pay some of these guys. So they will get non-tendered tomorrow evening, and then the free agent pool is set. And I think once that's set, then we'll know a lot more about what the Brewers' payroll is going to look like, what their needs are. Johnny Scope is obviously the big name here. So it's going to be like Saturday morning. Ask me again on Saturday morning, and I think we'll know a lot more where the Brewers and other teams stand.
What about
I don't hear you. I thought we were all okay. Yeah. Here we go. Now we can hear you. Go ahead.
Maybe if you guys had this better? Meeting before
yeah,
the show.
Go.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Hey, Jonathan Scope, you're talking about him. Do you think there's a trade market out there for Scope? Do you think there's enough people out there that say we'd like to have him for that 1 year, even though it's going to cost us $10 million in arbitration? Or do you think everybody says, again, for $2 or $3 million less if we let him play out in free agency, but then it's a competition between you and other teams?
Yeah, that's the hard part is if you want to trade him, these teams know that there's a really good chance the Brewers could let this guy go tomorrow at 7 o'clock.
Right.
And why give up players for a guy when you can just sign him tomorrow at 7:01? And that's going to be the problem the Brewers run into. And, look, this has been a tricky one. This has been one that I hear they've debated a lot.
Because you gave up prospects.
You made a determination that this was a player that was worth giving up. Johnny Villar plus two prospects. And
Luis Ortiz being one of them.
Well, and look, like it's an open question of what he's going to be.
Sure.
His little taste with Baltimore of the big leagues
did
was not
well.
Good.
Two
but Gene Carmona
is
another really good player that they gave up in that trade. So, you know, and the idea was you get a player for a year and a half. So there is something to be said for sticking with the evaluation that you made when you went into that negotiation. But there also is something to be said for knowing when to sort of chalk it up as a bad deal.
We had Harris Tour out here yesterday, the Milwaukee Admirals, and as we all know, he's also part owner of the Brewers and big booster for UWM and everything else. And he was saying, I asked him what he, you know, has learned about Stearns that he didn't know before they hired Stearns. He said, I compare him a lot to Ron Wolf, where he's not afraid to cut his losses and move on versus going, well, we're just going to let this play out a little bit longer. You know, I made this sign, let's just see how it plays out. And Harris loves that about him. That if he makes a mistake, boom, gone, and we'll move on.
Yeah, I mean, look, and it's tough to do. I think it's easy for us on the outside to
what
sit there and.
What mistake has he made, though, that he's moved on?
Bullpen
he's made
guys.
Some trades. I mean, there's been not every trade they've made worked out. You know, Chris Davis was probably the Chris Davis trade is one that was that's on the low end.
But no one wanted him here, though, Chris Davis.
Well, I mean, there was logic to trading him in that you had
a lot of guys, you know, you had
a logjam, you had guys coming,
right.
And then he goes
and you needed a catcher, and you got Nottingham.
Well, he goes and have that hell of a year. Did he play with the A's? Where did he go? A's?
Chris Davis.
Yeah.
He's had back to back, you know, big homers.
50 homers. So look, I mean, there. You know, that's the thing about trades. You have to be willing. You have to accept that sometimes you get the low end of those trades. You're not going to win every trade, but then the hard part is again, it's knowing like when do you have to like be patient with the outcome of those deals, and when do you have to cut your losses, and that's. That's hard to do, and I was going to say it's easy for us. I think it's easier for us and people in the seats to kind of make those determinations and say $10 million for Jonathan Scope, who showed you nothing outside of one swing against Madison Bumgarner.
He was just an all-star.
He was not good, but, you know, look, there also is something to be said for sticking with the evaluation that got you there. I don't know. I think sometimes it's worth, like, thinking about things in our own lives. You make a decision, and then you kind of stubbornly – stick by it, and sometimes stubbornly sticking by it can be a good thing in the end. Like you get through rough times with the decision that you made, and in the end you're better for it. If you just sort of cut bait every time you hit a rough patch with something in your everyday life, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. So look, I don't know. Ken Rosenthal says they're leaning toward non-tender.
Correct. I saw that.
And Ken Rosenthal is usually right.
Normally on it. I was telling Steve yesterday, you said, what do you learn about David Stearns? And of course, you know, we're down in spring training with you almost every year in the last couple of years here. And just watching his joker and then just listening to him. And I said this to Steve. He feels like a tire kicker.
Yep.
I mean, it feels like he checks out everything. He goes around.
Because,
he goes around. And he checks it out. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And he just kind of just moves on to the next thing. I mean,
do you guys have an auto dealership sponsor?
Yeah, my good friend's over at Hyundai West Dallas, located on Hollywood 100 and Arthur Avenue.
So there's no cost in going over to Hyundai West Dallas and kicking some tires,
right?
No. You get to see what's out there. And,
absolutely.
You know, even if you end up buying a insert alternative car brand here, you know, knowing what the market is for the Hyundai will help you buy brand X.
Yes.
And I think that is the same thing with this. And it makes it tricky to figure out what they're doing. Because
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're very they are certainly not open to sharing what they're doing because they feel like doing so is not in their interest. Anytime info gets out from that side, there's a reason for it.
Well,
and there are
it.
Times to do it.
Last year, all it was about was starting pitching.
Yes.
Right? They're in on this guy. They're on that guy. They're on that guy. And then all of a sudden, they trade for Yelich. It's like, they're trading for Yelich. Wait a second. Yelich? Why are you trading for Yelich? Okay, we got that. And then all of a sudden, what, within 24 hours, not even that, a couple hours later, they announce that they're signing Lorenzo Cain, or word gets out they're signing Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah.
Nobody going in the offseason said, you know what, I think they're going to get two outfielders this offseason. And he went and did it. Now, for me, how would you line up where you think their bulletin board is as far as needs go of, okay, I want to get this, this, and this in this order this offseason if I can, if you're David Stearns?
I would think it's a reliever. I would think that if you can build another powerful bullpen, deep, give Craig Counsell five or six guys that he trusts, like he had at points during that season. He had it early, and then he had it again late after they made some moves. That is a really, really good way to win games because, to me, everything last year when they were good – was built around how they deployed the bullpen arms. And I actually think that makes you a better offensive team because I probably said this to you guys before, because if you can give your hitters hope, that I think is conducive to scoring runs. That, you know, the players feel like, the hitters feel like, if we give these guys a run or two early, you know, we can win this game. Or if the other team goes ahead, they have a really good feeling that this other team's going to hold them. You know, the pitchers are going to hold the other team here. We just need to score a couple runs and we can do this. And that's, I think, was a big key to their success. So to me, if you kind of work backwards that way, if you maybe invest a little bit in a reliever, I think you've got that core of, you know, the initial outgetters, starters, whatever right. you want to call them. You've got a lot of guys there. You can use them the way you want to use them. You know, still they're growing in their career. 5 good innings, and then you go to that bullpen. And then, look, offensively, there's certainly needs there too, second base, catcher. But to me, I think if you're asking what's at the top of my board, it's
bullpen.
A premium, you know, one premium reliever I think would look really good on this team. And there's you know, they're like every year, there's guys.
Oh, yeah.
Talking with Adam McAlvey, our Milwaukee baseball insider out here at Blaine's Farm and Fleet. Sixth
good,
and
I
Rawson.
Can sit down now. He finally
in Oak
sat
Creek
down.
For the 12th annual WSSP
well, I'm standing under
toy
this
drive
heater. I'm going to melt.
For Children's Hospital of Wisconsin.
Like the candy.
When we talk about – that's true. When we talk about needs, Adam, and this goes back to the Jonathan Scope question that Sparky had as well, to me – the greatest need is to make sure you're getting some offense up the middle of your infield. I mean, the thing that killed that Brewers lineup last year and the reason that the offense never really got going until after the trade deadline was because you got nothing from Manny Pena in the catcher yeah. position offensively. You got nothing from second base, and you got almost nothing from shortstop until Arcia heated up at the end of the season and into the playoffs. If it's not Jonathan Scope and it's not Mike Moustakas, there's got to be some sort of addition up the middle of the infield that helps out this offense, wouldn't you think? Or do you think Keston Hiura may be ready to step into that hole?
Well, Keston Hiura is a name for late this coming season.
Right.
He's not going to be there at the beginning of the season. I doubt Mauricio Dubon, another really good middle infield prospect, he's coming back from ACL surgery. I think he's another guy that's just going to need to go get some ABs at the start of the year in the minor leagues. So I agree with you that you're probably going to have to do something there. If you go with the already re-signed Eric Kratz, Manny Pena is one of these arbitration guys that we'll know about tomorrow night. The expectation is that you'll tender him a deal and bring him back. If that's your catching tandem, I think you're right that from second base and shortstop, you're going to want a little bit more offense. You need to trust your coach's evaluation of which is the real Orlando Arcia and is there better offense there from him. And then I think you need to figure out second base. And
what about Dubon?
Well, I think he's a guy for later in the year.
That he starts at AAA.
I think so. I think coming off
I
surgery,
think he was probably on the verge of getting called up
oh,
prior
for
to getting
sure.
hurt. He
for
was
sure.
right there.
Right there, and in the worst timing for an injury, yep. and you feel for the kid. But I think you want to get his feet back under him before
sure.
you start putting him in there. So, yeah, look, the key guy in this discussion is Travis Shaw, and he gave them a great gift by agreeing to go to second and then being pretty good there. Because now that opens up your options if you we'll see what
but,
the decision is with Scope. I think Travis Shaw is a candidate to be the second baseman.
We should clarify something here, though. Because I don't know, and maybe he did. I don't know if he said to Stearns and Council, you know what, I'll play second base the rest of my career here in Milwaukee for you guys. Or if it was, okay, I'll play second base the rest of the year so you guys can get Moustakas. I think it's a different conversation if you're going back to Travis Shaw now and going, hey, we want to sign a full-time third baseman here on a 3-year deal or something like that, and we need you to move permanently to second base. I don't know if his answer is the same as it was last year, doing it for the good of the team for the second half of the year, knowing Moustakas was going to be a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't – I mean, does it help his value that he can play second base when he gets a chance to get money again? Does it hurt his value because maybe he's not as good defensively there at second base?
It helps his value because you know he's good at first, second, and
for the
third.
The more you can do.
You can play, the more you
well, if
and
he's
that's,
good at
that's
second,
the,
long-term,
and I
right.
think, I think there were a couple of
I
games.
I thought he was that, average at least.
I think there were a couple of games where he was below average last year and it hurt him. And then a lot of games where he was average. And then some games where he made plays.
Yeah,
like,
there was a couple.
You know, his thing at third that he was good at was charging the ball. That's a play that comes in. That happens a lot at second base. And he made that. I think he was fine there. And I don't know that he's not Roberto Alomar there. But, I mean, I thought he was pretty good, and I haven't specifically asked him that question that you just raised. I mean, maybe that's something David Stearns would talk about, or can they look at Travis Shaw as the second baseman?
Right.
But I think the answer is probably what Craig Counsell would say, too, is they're trying to shed those labels, and I think there is probably the likelihood of what they did late last year where you want guys interchangeably that you can move around, and it's Travis Shaw second base on a bunch of days and a little bit of third and mix and match.
Right.
And I think that is going to be the solution. That's the way the game is going right now. Get the platoon advantage everywhere you can. And, you know, so that would mean finding a right-handed bat for second, you know, figuring something out at third. I mean, my point was him doing that last year, it has opened up the door to a bunch of different solutions to find offense because it's giving you another place you can look.
Since we do have to go to a break, or you can hang on to yours till after the break.
Is he going to stay after the break?
Yeah, he's hanging out for another segment.
Is he really?
While we're on the subject of Travis Shaw, before we go to this break, real quickly, Adam, how much do you think it helped how much they shift when moving him from third to second base? Because I noticed a lot of times I'd be watching the game and Travis Shaw would make a play at second base, and I'd go, well, that's a play he'd make often at third because of the way that guys are positioned.
Yeah.
He's charging in on a lot of balls. He doesn't have to cover as much ground as a second baseman might normally have to cover. I think the shifts helped a lot in terms of he was doing things he was familiar with doing at third base but only doing them at second base.
Well, that's part of it. And then also it's that how often was he just in the right position? And, you know, they certainly – conceded that his range was below average as a second baseman. But if you put him in the right position to start, you can live with that. And that was part of the discussion when they first started talking about this is with shifting now, it has opened the door to a lot of players that you didn't think could play second base or shortstop. Now maybe can do it if you can be smart about the way you position him. And look, I think Jonathan Scope is maybe in that category at shortstop. He doesn't look like a shortstop. But if you put him in the right place, he showed down the stretch when he played that he could do it. So that was definitely part of the equation when they made that move. And I think we're going to see more and more and more of it as shifts get better. I think teams are getting more sophisticated about how they shift. That's going to open the door to putting guys in some weird spots. You know, I'm sure we'll hear something about Ryan Braun in second base in spring training, partly because he likes to mess with us by bringing it up.
Right, he did that last year.
But if you put him in the right position to start the play,
well, if you got Bryce Harper in the outfield, let him play second.
Let's do it.
We're out here with Adam McCalvey, our Milwaukee baseball insider from Brewers.com and MLB.com.
Yeah, you know, looking back on this year, and of course, you know, they lost. What's the coach that they lost? Went to Cincinnati, I believe, right?
Both, actually. Derek Johnson and their bullpen coach.
So did we ever find out what the reasoning why inside on that?
Gary, when you ask what is the reason why for any question,
I mean, because it was kind of odd.
What is always the answer?
Money.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it
so
about
I think
money?
He got. I think he got a lot of money.
Okay. Well,
I think
okay.
he got a lot of money, and I
so
think
nothing
he,
else to it other than that. Now,
well, look,
there was no inside. You didn't want to do what I want you to do. Yeah, you didn't like the way I was doing it.
No, and look, it's a fair question because you lost Derek Johnson, the pitching coach who you love and all these players love.
Right.
You lost you dismissed Lee Tunnell.
Yeah, you chose
but
that.
Then you also Darnell Coles, their hitting coach, left by his own volition and got the same job with the D-backs.
So it's clearly about money.
That's
Nobody
my understanding, and I asked a couple of players whether there were things going on behind the scenes that, you know, guys were unhappy. You know, in today's game, the coaches are hearing from a lot of different places, and the coaches are like this conduit from your team in the front office and all these analysts, that the guys crunching the numbers, and they come up with ideas and plans and you know, all kinds of things, and then it's up to the coach to communicate that to the player. So coaching, the job of a coach has expanded, I think, dramatically in the last couple of years as front offices have dramatically expanded. And you could see why, where maybe for some coaches they wouldn't like that in a front office like the Brewers that is so driven by analytics. So I totally get why this is a question. But, again, I've asked players, I've asked the coaches. Derek Johnson himself was asked, and everybody says that this is not a case of that. It's just a case where a guy got an opportunity and, you know, sort of an opportunity
because
he couldn't pass
up. Because people don't talk about coaches' salary a lot. And I think if you look at a lot of these guys, they toil around and they really don't make a whole lot of money.
No, and it's on year-to-year deals.
Yes, it's a one-year deal.
Yeah.
So if it is just money, I mean, I get down with that because you've got to make the money when you can.
Well, and then when people hear that, I think some people say, well, why wouldn't the Brewers just pony up for this guy because
Correct.
He was so important to what they did? And for that, I cannot give you a clear answer.
Okay.
You know, the organizations have a philosophy of how they compensate. David Stern said he really wants his people to feel like they're well compensated, that they're valued, but there is apparently a limit to how far that will go. And I don't know details of Derek Johnson's deal, but I have heard that it was, you know, He's doing all right. He made the right decision.
Is it fair for Brewers fans to maybe be freaking out a little bit that you lost Derek Johnson? Because he has taken guys and I mean, and this is where my question is going. Are we giving the pitching coach too much credit? Because he's taken guys who nobody expected much from. The Chase Andersons of the world, the Zach Davies, Junior Guerra, Jolys Chacin was much better than anybody expected him to be. I mean, the list goes on and on of guys who played above their heads while Derek Johnson was coaching them. Are we giving too much credit to Derek Johnson? Should we continue to expect that level of play from those guys? Or is it understandable for Brewers fans to be weary about the starting rotation and pitching as a whole going into this season?
Look, I don't blame people if they're a little worried about that. There's no way around that was a loss for the organization. He was a very, very good pitching coach. And it's not just the starters. I mean, Jeremy Jeffress is a guy. He added that splitter.
Right.
And look, he's always been good here, but he was a different animal with that splitter. A lot of that was Derek Johnson. So he was a big part of the success that they had on the pitching side. I don't know the answer about how big or whether it's a drop-off is to be expected. I will say Chris Hook is a really good guy.
And that's
too.
A minor league guy that has worked with a lot of these younger guys coming up.
And when you talk to them, you hear the same things about Chris Hook from Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff and the guys who've worked with him that you heard from Chase Anderson and Zach Davies about Derek Johnson. Blending of the mechanics of pitching and sort of identifying flaws when things aren't going right, but then also the mental part of pitching was such a big thing for Derek Johnson. And I think that's going to be for Chris Hook as well. And the other thing is, you know, he talked a lot about wanting to be on the same page with the bullpen coach. And thinking about it a little more as a team, like co-pitching coaches. So that's another thing that we could see. Maybe that'll be a little bit different. But look, it's odd to see coaches leave a team that played within one game of the World Series. To see them leave for lateral jobs is a little weird. I get why people are a little bit freaked out about it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a little bit different. And then, you know, they hire Annie Haines as their hitting coach. Who's the assistant hitting coach for the Chicago Cubs. I don't know if you had a chance to read. It was a really good piece, and it's really long, though, on SI about hitting coaches in today's Major League Baseball.
I just saw that as I was walking in.
It is so good. And it talks about how no longer do you have to have played Major League Baseball in order to be a hitting coach in the pros, and that it's now more about launch angle and stats and being willing to learn and go with the organization. Stern said that. As well about the hires that they've made, that they're open to hearing new ways of going about it. Yeah. And guys like Chili Davis, who was in Chicago, said that he simply couldn't connect with the players on his team, that whether it was an age demographic type problem or whatever, there's not many guys left. And a lot of these guys who played little college baseball, and that's about it. It just blows your mind that this is the way the game is going. And you still have former players as managers, but those other jobs that they would take up over the course of time, those may be going away because of it.
Yeah, and look, it's another example of the role that numbers and analytics and data are playing in Major League Baseball.
Yep.
And the job of a coach now is you're wearing a lot of different hats, and you are, again, a conduit of ideas between some of these really smart people that are working in front offices now and the players. And then at the same time, you're doing what a hitting coach, we think of a hitting coach traditionally does, which is keep a guy's swing in the right place, talk about pitch recognition, talk about having a plan going to the plate, all those different things. It's a really tough job, and it's one of those jobs where, again, I think it's like, I think of middle relievers like this, where you don't notice them unless things are going badly. And maybe that's a little unfair for hitting coaches around the game, but it's just kind of the way it is. This guy comes really highly regarded. I texted a little with Christian Yelich, and he remembers loving him. He had him as a manager in the minor leagues.
Right.
Really liked the guy. He was a very young manager
Started
in pro baseball.
31, I think.
Very young.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that says something about the kind of guy. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll have to get to know him just like the players will once they get down to spring training.
And Stearns we trust. That's what everybody says. I mean, that's really it. I mean, Derek Johnson leaves, I freak out, obviously, because that's what I do, especially when it's one of my four guys that I wanted to make sure were signed long-term, and the other three still aren't. And so he leaves. I'm freaking out. Everybody's like, don't worry about it. Stearns knows what he's doing. Fair enough. So yeah, we'll see. And he promoted a minor league guy who, like you said, has a great track record with a lot of these young guys that are up here right now.
Yeah, and it's part of that is continuity. Maybe it would be different if they were in a different place as an organization in a rebuild type situation, right, where you bring in somebody totally new and you have the time for them all to grow together. You know, this club's going to be expected to be good next year. Yep. The Cubs are in a weird transition area right now, as their players are all getting really expensive because of all the success they've had. And these are great players that the Cubs got at the, you know, they drafted and developed them. They're on the verge of like a transition period. So they're going to be very good next year. The Brewers should be good next year. The Cardinals have some holes to fill this offseason. The Pirates maybe feel like they're on the
Reds
decline.
Just need pitching.
The Reds need pitching, and they're going to be.
And they got Derek Johnson.
I know it's
but look, when you go through all those things, I mean, the Brewers are definitely going to be mentioned.
For sure.
The Cubs maybe are still going to be the favorite, but the Brewers are going to be mentioned at least as a contender. So you don't want to start over.
I know it's not our team, but it'd be a shame if the Cubs only get one, right?
Oh yeah, one ring.
That's what Sparky said.
Yeah, it would mar Theo's legacy in Chicago.
Really?
If he only
all
gets,
those NLCSs?
If he only gets one.
It's a Sparky talk.
If he only gets one, it's not going to be any different than Aaron Rodgers getting only one with Green Bay or Brett Favre getting only one with Green Bay. Same thing. With the offensive talent that he has. And now, Gary, what if they add – no, they're not going to – but what if they add Bryce Harper to that lineup and they still can't get another one with all that money put into it?
Well, they just say they get Bryce Harper and they don't win. That just tells you how hard it really –
it is so hard to win. It is so hard to win.
Understand?
It's like that Dodgers organization throwing all that money at it.
It's just hard to do. People get it. It's hard to win Super Bowls. It's hard to win World Series.
Yeah.
And everything almost is. It's got to be like magical almost the way it works out for you.
Yep.
And you get on the run, and then what ends up happening? Sometimes you get special cases where you'll get a run where a team can go. You know, maybe 3 out of the last 5 years or 2 out of the last 5. I mean, so sometimes those things happen. But for the most part, to recreate that magic every year is just
hard. I think it's really rare for, you know, we're seeing that in the NBA a lot. You see it maybe with the Patriots. So maybe it feels
in
this
Patriots
era where we
– outlier.
Giants.
Where we see
two.
Teams do that. But
Pittsburgh.
Man, it's really hard to
it's
win.
Hard
and look,
to do.
I've been looking at some historical stuff for some projects that we're doing. And the Brewers, the 82 Brewers are the best example of that. They won in 82 with a great team.
Yep.
Everybody around here believes they should have won the World Series that year, that they were the better team, and with Raleigh Fingers they would have won it. But look, we're coming back. We'll do it again. And then people here remember what happened in 83.
That's right.
And that was – Robin Yount talked about that a lot over the years. Like, it was a lesson in how hard it is to really – to win it all.
And that's, fans don't get that.
But you know what? I mean, they didn't win it all. But that's what makes last year even more impressive for the Brewers. Because 2 years ago, everybody's like, well, is this real? I mean, can they come back and can they do it again? And the Brewers, I always showed that they could do it again, but they went even farther. This was still supposed to be coming towards the end of the rebuild, if you listen to everybody like myself, who was talking about how long this rebuild was going to take. That's what made it even more impressive. I think Stearns is going to get – he's going to go for the knockout blow here. I think he's going to get a big-name player at some point this offseason. It won't be two, maybe like Yelich and Kane, but I think he'll get one.
Well, I think that would involve probably
a
combination of moves, because if you look at it now, they've got about – $70 million committed to like 8 or 9 guys that they have signed already. That includes tradable players like Eric Thames and Chase Anderson. There's $12 million. I think if you're going to do something big, you probably have to shed payroll elsewhere.
Agreed.
And again, that's why tomorrow is going to be a big day. And Jonathan Scope, that's going to be a big salary number. And we'll see which direction they go. We're just going to know more about which way they're heading as they go to the winter meetings. I think after tomorrow, we'll know, just kind of have a better feeling for what the money looks like.
But putting together a championship organization is not easy. They've done just that over at Young Express, though, Sparky, and you could be a part of that team if you so choose.
No question, and they've been a great part of this toy drive for a number of years. Once again, this year, matching donations in the 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. hours each day of the week out here at Blaine's Farm and Fleet in Oak Creek. They've been in business for over 27 years. I mean, the economy booming, Young Express is expanding in all departments, which magnifies their need to increase their independent contractor base. They're looking for successful transporters of expedited freight. What does that mean? It means you get to drive for a living, right? You go to point A, pick stuff up, put it in your vehicle, go to point B, drop it off. Dispatch tells you where you're going next. That's all there is. If you ever thought about becoming your own boss, you'll be an entrepreneur. This is going to be your own little company here. You're going to use Young Express to make money. Now's your time. It's time to join the Young Express team. Live a stress-free lifestyle. Put the windows down. Turn up the radio to the big show. And drive,
baby, drive.
and get paid for that. Thanks for the enthusiasm, jerk. Why Young Express? They have a 24/7 dispatch team. They are extremely dedicated, take it very personal to keep drivers moving. They're right now looking for people that can focus on local driving. And the great part about that is you get to sleep in your own bed at night. Tuck your kids in. They also are in need of regional drivers and nationwide drivers, but a bigger need for local drivers. Looking for full-time independent contractors? Join the Young Express team today. You can find them at youngexpress.com. JUNGExpress.com. Young Express. Success drives them.
Thanks to Karen in West Dallas who dropped off $20. Tom Hoffman from an Allstate agent in West Milwaukee. He made a generous donation. Jeff from Franklin dropped off $50, and it's all for Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. That's what we're out here all day, all week for 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. taking your new unwrapped toys, cash donations. You can donate using a debit or credit card with our dip jars out here. You can always donate at 1057FMTheFan.com. Chuck and Winkler out at Blaine's Farm and Fleet in Waukesha, 4 to 6 this evening. If that's an easier drop-off for you, feel free and drop off the toys with those jokers out in Waukesha. And, of course, thanks to our Milwaukee baseball insider, Adam McKelvey, who came out. And I know you drop a little something in the toy box every year. We appreciate that.
We
appreciate you giving us some time here on the Wendy's Big
Show. We failed. Was supposed to be a candy melting deal.
I know. We totally dropped the ball.
This is a good place for it, too, because Farm and Fleet has the best candy raisins.
Yes, they really do.
The best.
That's hilarious. Because
they're, like, perfectly dried, you know. They got to be a little
my
dried.
My fiance and her dad love them. That's where they get them at, is right here.
I already went in there. The box is empty.
Yes.
Someone got here before me.
Somebody's microwaving candy somewhere, and it doesn't involve Adam McKelvey. Adam, really appreciate it. We'll have to line up the cooking, and I put that in quotations,
that.
Demonstrations sometime soon.
Is there anything you want us to ask Stearns?
Well, I think maybe I'll give you a little hint on the non-tenders.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll give you a little bit on the idea, not on these individual players, but the idea that they're players for, like, these big boys on the pitching market. We haven't talked to him for a couple of days, and I'd be curious to hear if he throws cold water on that or if he expresses an openness to just the concept of getting one of these big guys. Because if there's one thing we've learned from him from the last couple of years is whatever you think he's going to do, whatever it looks like logically he's going to do, he's always got some surprise.
Yep.
So, I don't know, maybe he'll give you a little bit, maybe he'll nudge you in the right direction on that, whether this is just talk or whether it's they really could go get somebody.
I have only one goal. I want to know why there's not a contract extension and why this isn't done. I don't understand.
For him?
Yes. For the life of me, I don't get it.
Well, but Mark said during the postseason that there's still multiple years left. They guard
that's
that.
That's not good enough for Sparky.
No.
It's such a close held secret.
Whatever he's making, is it enough? Because when they signed him, he was an unknown. You can't tell me whatever the value of his deal is justifies what they've done the last 2 years, that he doesn't deserve more money.
He's not going to tell you why he doesn't have a contract.
No, because seriously, if you value Matt Arnold, and I do,
yeah,
for me, I don't want to lose either one of them. So Stearns, you're president of baseball operations. Arnold, your general manager. Theo and Jed make it work in Chicago just fine. You all are going to make it work here. I don't want to worry about you two leaving going forward, and we're done. That's it. That's what I would do.
I think that is something to think about, but I just don't think feel like they're at that stage of things yet because there's years to go.
And Brewers' future president of baseball operations, David Stearns, will be out here
at 5 o'clock.
Yes. Yeah.
That means they had to give him at least a 5 or 6 year deal.
Yeah, and this is what Mark said during the thing. But look, this is the most closely held secret in the entire organization is what the contracts look like for Stearns and Council. What kind of years they're under? What kind
I'm going to volunteer to be his agent because his agent ain't doing a good job.
Adam, man, I'm going to tune in at 5. I can't wait.
Thank you very much. All right, guys. Always appreciate it. That's Milwaukee Baseball Insider Adam McKelvey.